The United States of America, known as Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, has come to symbolize freedom throughout the world. People from all nations and from all walks of life have called the United States home. The United States has welcomed them with open arms. Indeed, the famed Statue of Liberty is the embodiment of this dream. New York's public education system alone, its student body represents 145 countries. The United States has a deep affinity with Supreme Master Ching Hai. With her boundless love and compassion, Supreme Master Ching Hai has provided humanitarian assistance to many parts of the United States. In 1993, she sent relief teams to provide financial and material assistance to the victims of the six Midwestern states that were severely affected by heavy rain and flooding. On December 27, 1997, at the benefit concert A Journey Through Ascetic Realms, Supreme Master Ching Hai generously contributed $100,000 each to the Vietnam Children's Fund and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The following year, at another benefit concert, One World of Peace Through Music, she once more contributed generously, with two charity organizations being the recipients of her love. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital received $150,000, and the Starlight Children's Foundation received a check for $100,000. Additionally, in the face of one of the worst human tragedies ever to occur on U.S. soil, on September 11, 2001, Supreme Master Ching Hai responded immediately, sending relief teams from around the country and all over the world to Ground Zero in New York City. Supreme Master Ching Hai's financial contributions amounted to over $300,000 to organizations aiding the victims. To this day, Supreme Master Ching Hai continues to extend her loving compassion to all parts of the U.S., from Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, and Alabama, to California, Florida, Texas, Hawaii, and other states. We now invite you to listen to the following lecture by Supreme Master Ching Hai entitled Eternal Life, Universal Law, in Boston, Massachusetts, USA, on October 27, 1989.
Could you say that one could understand good and evil in terms of a teacher that teaches one towards understanding Buddha or being Buddha and Christ?
Yes.
As a teacher rather than as something that is personal.
As a teacher?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good is an energy and evil is an energy, and we are being taught by this energy how to realize our Buddhahood.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, and then the negative energy will leave us.
Yes.
Anyhow. Just like a baby, when he cries a lot. And you give him a dummy. Well, that satisfies him for a few minutes. But then he's hungry. He pulled it out. And he wants a real bottle.
You mean I believe or not believe or what?
Yes.
I believe. Reincarnation happens in front of your very eyes every day. Now when the trees flower, you get the seed, and the seed fall out and go back and become the trees and become flowers again, and so on, so on, and so.
Thank you.
Yes.
Christ also agree with reincarnation. Do you want to know? When somebody asks Christ, are you the manifestation or the incarnation of such and such previous prophets? He kept silence. Silence means yes. Otherwise, he would protest, no? He would say, no, you're nonsense. There's no incarnation, I'm the only one. No, he wouldn't. In the olden day, when we keep silence, that means we agree. Like when we read the Buddhist sutras, when some people invite him to go for meals, offering, or lecture, he keeps silent to agree. That is the old custom.
I understand you say that Buddhahood is the experience of having closeness and having that wisdom and love of all, inclusive love. Is that correct? That you have this wisdom and understanding and closeness with God?
Yes.
Okay. And my question is that I often find myself feeling anger and hatred. I think that's preventing me from knowing this wisdom. And I see people who have a great religious practice. They tend to be very loving and very calm. I wonder how is that so and why is that so? And can you give me some wisdom as why there's anger and hatred? And does one go about stopping anger and having hatred?
Right. You see, first we have to know the nature of anger and hatred in order to root them out. Anger and hatred is just a way of protection. Sometimes you feel threatened by others, people's opinion or way of life or behavior. It might harm you, harm your ego, harm your pride, or harm your body or your mind. So you became anger and sometimes resentful. Well, hatred is a very strong word. I wouldn't like to use it in every day because actually what we do is resenting, not really hatred. Hatred is deeper than that. Now, mostly we resent others when we feel threatened to our security. Therefore, do not blame yourself too much, yeah, when you are becoming angry. Just you have to analyze where that anger comes from, whether you are in the right or in the wrong. Sometimes you have the right to show a little outward angry in order to protect yourself. The question is not to stop anger, but to know when you should show a little anger and when you should not. To control it and to use it to your advantage, not to stop it altogether. Why? I have a little story about the snake for you. There was a very big and vicious snake. He lives in a tree hole. And he always eat the chickens and scares people and bite people. So everybody in the village scares of him. One day, the great yogis, great Buddhist monks, come to that place and sat over there and meditate. So the snake feels very peaceful and feel transformed. So he asked the monk how to suppress his vicious nature, his bad nature, and become a good snake. So the monks taught him 5 precepts. You shall not harm people. Yeah. You have to eat vegetarian. You do not tell lie. You do not certain said. You do not gambling, but that the snake doesn't know anyhow. So the foremost for him is not to harm people. So the snake said, all right, from today I practice meditation, I eat vegetarian, I don't kill chicken anymore. Also don't bite people.
Some of the benefits of a vegetarian diet: lower blood pressure, lower cholesterol levels, reduce type 2 diabetes, prevent stroke conditions, reverse atherosclerosis, reduce heart disease risk 50%, reduce heart surgery risk 80%, prevent many forms of cancer, stronger immune system, increase life expectancy up to 15 years, higher IQ, conserve up to 70% clean water, save over 70% of the Amazonian rainforest from clearance for animal grazing. A solution for world hunger. Free up 3,433 million hectares of land annually. Free up 760 million tons of grain every year, half the world's grain supply. consume 2/3 less fossil fuels than those used for meat production, reduce pollution from untreated animal waste, maintain cleaner air, save 4.5 tons of emissions per US household per year, stop 80% of global warming, plus more. Save your life. Be veg, go green.
So one day the Buddhist monk has to go away for some days and tell the snake to stay home and practice meditation and wait for him. And so the children passing by and see the snakes now sitting very quiet in meditation and in samadhi, so they are not afraid of him anymore, and they want to revenge, because before they were afraid of him and now they want to take revenge. So they put stone and throw at him, and the snake also didn't do anything.
The master didn't say you should not be angry, you shouldn't harm people. He means should not show any violence at all.
Ahimsa means non-violence, yeah? So the snake keep quiet and trying to meditate again. But the children kicks him and pull his tails out and whirl him into a circle. So the snake got so dizzy, and then they throw him, beat him into the tree trunks and all kind of thing, and all his body and get bruised and black and blue. And he lay there half dead. And the master came home and said, "What's happened to you? What happened?" He said, "It is because of the 5 precepts, non-violence." And the monks were very surprised. They said, what is with non-violence? So, well, you taught me not to be violent. So yesterday the children came and pulled my tails and throw stones at me, and I didn't react. So they carry on with their play until now. I nearly died. So the master said, "You are stupid. I didn't tell you not to hiss. You can hiss, scare people away." But that is the difference between having wisdom and not having. When we have not the wisdom, we are not enlightened, we are carried away by our own emotion. When we are wise, we have wisdom, enlightened, we use the emotion to suit our occasion and advantages. Doesn't mean we should altogether eliminate the emotion. We just know how to use it. If you want to have this control power and wisdom, you have to have enlightenment. And to get enlightenment is through an experienced teacher. Just like if you want to learn English, you have to find an experienced English teacher. That's all.
I was just going to ask you that this goes back to the question of what is good and what is evil. When you decide that your position is good, you justify your anger by saying, "I'm right and this person is wrong." So you were saying that controlling your emotion by using your wisdom, but if you know that you believe or you think you are right.
Yes, when you are wise, you will know. Mm.
Then, of course, your emotion is going to go along with what your opinion of yourself is. So how do you go out of this cycle of saying, "I'm right, this person is wrong, and
no,
therefore I am justified to be angry"?
No. You not justify your anger in that way. First, you have wisdom. You know what is really right is, not just by your standard judgment anymore. At the moment, you always think you're right anyhow. So when you anger, when you argue with people, we always think we are right. Otherwise, we wouldn't argue. But after we are enlightened, we know truly where is right. We do not carry away by anger, but we use anger only when necessary. And not from hatred, not from real anger, but just to put up with the situation. Like a mask, when you play theater or something. In a way, you say your emotion is under control. Yeah? When you want to use it, you use it. When you don't want, you put it aside. Yeah? Mm. So we need enlightenment in any case.
I have 2 questions. First of all, on the nature of enlightenment, yes, I say to myself, "I want enlightenment. I suffer, I don't want suffering." And it seems to me that if I were enlightened, the suffering would go away. It would be a much more pleasant state to be in. And yet, every time I start to desire enlightenment for itself, it seems to me that I'm making one more obstacle in the way of enlightenment. In other words, if I want it, it's like any of the 1,001 desires, maybe even worse, that take me away from just ordinary happiness. You know, if I have too much of a lust or greed, sex desire or greed for money or whatever, I'm not happy. And it's the same thing with wanting enlightenment. I get in my own way. I wonder if you could say a word as to how to overcome getting in your own way with desiring enlightenment for that.
Yes. Now, you must know there are good desire and bad desire. For example, you have stomach ache, yeah? Or you have cancer, whatever, and it pains you every day, yeah? You are going through a lot of pain and suffering. And now you go to the hospital. What does the doctor do? He cut you in two parts, yeah? Cut with a knife and put a lot of needles into your hands and even bind you on the bed. So now you could say, my goodness, I have pain and suffering. That's why I come to you, and now you make me even more pain and suffer. What is good? I would rather stay home then. Make even more pain for me. It's no sense. But there is sense in it. These pains are to get rid of the small pains and then cure forever the both pains. The pain that you suffer under the hands of the surgeon and the doctors and the needles are not the forever pain. This is temporary pain, and it is necessary to cure the pain altogether. Similarly, the desire for enlightenment is the most noble in the universe, and use the most noble one to suppress the lowlier desire, to replace it, in order both desire will be gone. Whether you want or not, human beings always desire enlightenment. The minute you are in suffering, the minute you look at the universe, you say, geez, who made all this? Where have I come from? This is the natural tendency of man to want enlightenment. It is just like the natural tendency for us to eat when we are hungry. So now we cannot run away from the desire for enlightenment, so we might as well want it. So then we get rid of all the lowlier desires. It's like the medicine or the knife of the doctor will cure your sickness forever.
Thank you very much. Yes, that is clear. My second question is simply this. You've spoken of the experience of the Buddha nature, and you've likened it to a state of consciousness. I wonder if in your own experience you also experienced God as a person, as a being, like we say, supreme being, or is it just state of consciousness?
It's hard to say if God is a being or a non-being. Yes, he is a being, but not in our human sense of a being. Just an almighty power. We can call that a being. And we can also call that as a non-being. According to our human standard, he is a non-being. But according to the higher experience and wisdom, he is a being in a different sense. There are many kinds of beings in this universe. There are inert beings, there are sentient beings, non-sentient beings, visible beings, and non-visible beings. So God can be categorized as invisible beings. But do not feel attached for just a being, some kind of a lump of something, or concentrated, some form. No, no, no. It's difficult to say so. You can only experience God or Buddha nature. You could not talk about it. That is a difficulty with all the masters and all the enlightened people. Otherwise, everybody can understand in a minute. The best way to understand is to have that kind of experience ourselves, and which I will offer to you with no cost, no obligation, but your sincerity.
Thank you very much.
Hi, how are you? I have three questions.
Yes.
Okay, the first question is, what is the truth of the universe?
It is hard to say it in one word, or two words. But it's like this. The truth represents our real self, our own true worth, or we mean the kingdom of God, or the greatest wisdom, which we have and we do not use at the moment. So what we say truth and false is, for example, like this. Now we see the world around us and experience many things in our daily life. And these things we think, are they true? They happen to me. I see it with my own eyes and hear with my own ears and experience with my own intelligence. But when you are going to a higher consciousness, for example, you're wiser, yeah? You become wiser. And you see things in different way. You say, oh, geez, these are not true. It wasn't as what I thought. It is something else. That is what we call, we realize the truth. For example, when we were very young, as babies or children, we occupy ourselves with toys and with all kind of children games. And for us, at that time, it was all true. Nothing else that is more important than our games and our toys and our children imagination. Huh? But when you grow up, what do you see? Hmm? You look back at your children game, are you interested anymore? This is all children game. But at that time, for you, it's all real. It's all life and death matter, no? You're fighting with each other and you're selling cakes and you're making business, everything is real. Right? So when we find the truth, means we grow up in wisdom. Hmm? We became nearer to God, we came nearer to Buddhahood.
And the other one is, how did you know the truth you found is the truth of the universe?
How do I know?
Yeah.
Just like when you drink water, how do you know if it's cold or hot? It's very simple. No argument about that. Yeah?
Okay, also the other thing is, what is that physical feeling when the moment you found the truth?
Oh, when you're enlightened?
What did you feel?
There are many ways. Sometimes you have no physical feeling whatsoever. You enjoy in a different dimension. It's not always relating to the physical feeling, okay? You do not use the physical body to enjoy the heavenly bliss. It is a different kind of enjoyment, which manifests also sometimes in a physical feeling, like you feel very peaceful, very tranquil. There's nothing will move you at all, no anger, no hatred arise in your mind, and your body feels kind of so relaxed and so beautiful. That is a kind of lighter samadhi, yeah? Once you are in a deeper samadhi, there's no connection whatsoever with the physical body, and you can't tell. But when you go back, then the manifestation of the body takes place in the physical level. For example, you will be more loving to people. You do your work faster. You think quicker. You are more tolerant, yeah? And you look at all the books and you understand just like this. In another word, you're more intelligent, you're more loving, you're more calm. That's how it manifests through the physical body. Yeah? But otherwise, when you are in very deep samadhi, you are disconnected with the body. No physical feeling. Hmm? Right?
I just like to know, what's the meaning of the logo of Buddhism?
It's just one of his manifestation of his dignity. Hmm? Of his high level of attainment. All right?
Okay, thank you.
But that is not visible on the physical body. It is actually seen by the wisdom eye from the disciples. So they draw it down from their own seeing. It's not from ordinary people seeing like that. Yeah? So when you see a living Buddha, if it happened to be, there is another living Buddha like Sakyamuni come in front of you, you might not tell him to open it for you and have a look. He may not have it. You have to use a different eye to see.
Okay, thanks.
I work in a hospital. And sometimes I work with children who are very sick. And I was wondering, how should we understand why it is that some small children who have no choice and who can make no mistakes have to suffer so much?
I understand your heart, yes. I used to wonder like that also. I used to say, well, if we are adult, we may make some mistake or can take the retribution for it. But the children, they're so innocent. Well, I used to think like that, but now I know they are reincarnation. There is the law of reincarnation. What you sow, so shall you reap. You reap not enough in this life, you reap the next life. You reap the minute you are born, Otherwise, how can we explain God's mercy, which is so differentiated? Some are born with disease, some are born have some trouble, some are born blind, some are born deaf, etc. God is ever merciful, just that we reap what we sow. Otherwise, we cannot explain. Now, it is difficult to believe this, but it isn't difficult. If we meditate in some kind of transcendental way, we may go to a higher plane of consciousness, and we see through the past lives of a person, and we know why it so happened. Then we are satisfied or justified. Right? Are you a doctor?
Yes.
Yes? For children? Specialist in children? Yeah? I'm happy to know that you work from your heart. Yes. Anyhow, every time you work, try not to feel personally involved. Otherwise, you'll be drained out of energy. Just do your best and leave everything to God. It's God who kills or who severe. It's not our hands to help. Actually, He only uses our hand to help who He wants to help, who deserves the help. Yeah, the others has to go through some kind of lessons, some kind of cleansing process through suffering in order to be greater in the next life. Because we are continually in eternity. We're not born only once, otherwise it's too depressing. Too depressing, huh? 100 lives. What a waste of creative energy on God's part. No, He creates and we live all the time. What we do mistakenly this life, we make up in the next. Yeah? What we cannot pay this life, we pay in the next. Just like you take a mortgage.
You've introduced two terms today, and I do not know them too well. And those two terms are Buddha nature.
Yes.
And samadhi.
Oh, yes.
First, the Buddha nature.
Ah.
Does a squirrel have a Buddha nature? And does this mic have a Buddha nature?
They all
does
have.
Does everything have Buddha
yes.
nature? Yes. Everything that
That's
has.
What we call in Hinduism the term that God is omnipresent. God is in all creation. Similar that way.
And what is Buddha nature?
This is what we call God nature. Or God. Omnipresent God.
What is God? I don't understand.
You do not know God? Well then come for initiation. I show you. I show you what God is. because God is not to be explained in our everyday language. It can be known, can be experienced, can be realized, but it's difficult to express in human language what God is. Just a very mighty power, very loving, very compassionate, beyond our comprehension.
I see. Okay.
And the second?
Second is samadhi. You said that samadhi was a consciousness above, so that you only see happiness and serenity without looking at miserableness and suffering and so on.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is how can you have happiness and bliss if you don't have suffering?
Well, we suffer enough, don't we? We suffer enough already. When we're in samadhi, even you won't suffer then? You even want to suffer in samadhi and that is too much.
Can you explain the term samadhi again?
Samadhi means you are in deep peace and serenity, in a higher kind of consciousness, where you know things different from what you know now, where you know the truth, and you realize that things aren't what we think they are in everyday life. Right? But suffering in samadhi, that is difficult to attain. I'm sorry, in samadhi there isn't any suffering. That is why it is called samadhi. Otherwise it would term suffering. Yeah? Now suffering we have when we aren't in samadhi, when we in ordinary sense. But when we are in samadhi, we realize that there isn't any suffering at all. Just only hallucination, imagination, dream. playwright, play stage, nothing more than bubbles in the sea.
Sometimes, is there not happiness in suffering?
Sometimes.
For instance, let's say you were going through a hard time.
Yeah.
But you learn a lot from it, and from that you have happiness through suffering.
From the hard time you learn,
right.
And you become happy, you gain happiness.
Right.
That's all right, that's the purpose of suffering, so that you learn to grow up.
So I don't understand the differentiation between suffering and happiness in samadhi.
Well, I have told you already, it's all lessons, all learning, all dream. But then when you go through struggle in order to gain a little bit of happiness later, that is too ephemeral even. Just a small part of the wisdom. If you learn the whole thing, and you know even that happiness and that sorrow are both hallucination, maya, false. Yeah? You gain a super sense of happiness, transcendental, higher than that ordinary happiness that you learn from struggling. Yeah? Well, it's hard to explain when you're not yet in samadhi. Well, I invite you to come and join with the samadhi order. So one day you will know everything, and no need I have to use the limited and poor human language to explain to you something of the glorious nature out of this world experience. For example, in the film, God Must Be Crazy, remember? The black guy, Kika Kikau, huh? He saw the telescope, and he saw many people from a distance by the telescope, and he asked the man, how did they all get in there? Because he never saw these things before. Well, the scientists had a hard time to explain to him, people aren't getting in there. You only seen them through the glasses. But it takes a long time for him to understand. Actually, that is already easy because he saw it himself. Fancy you explain this thing to someone who never saw a telescope before, and you have never seen such thing. And how can you explain to him? But you can know all this by self-experience. I do not expect you to believe everything I say by just blind faith. You must experience them. And then you know, I also offer you the opportunity to experience. I do not only theorize in all the time and say, you have to believe in God and Buddha nature, believe in samadhi and all kind of things. I offer you the chance to realize it, okay? That's the best way and the most easy way. Eat the cake and know what it's like. Yeah?
What is the training to eat the cake?
Oh, there is no need any training. Just your willingness and sincerity to know what your real self is. And in order to do that, of course there are some prerequisite conditions, like we have to make a turn. Like before we're doing all kind of things, violating the universal law, we eat the flesh and incur in a lot of, as you sow, so shall you reap, karma. Now we turn, we don't incur this trap, this attachment to this world anymore. then we arise up to God. But through the process of opening up the God power within you. For example, you know how to open the tap water, yeah? Then the water will run out, but the baby couldn't. So you will have to show the baby how to open the tap, and next time he knows. So I will show you how to open the tap. Then you get the water of life, and every day you can open, right?
Thank you very much.
And you have samadhi, you have God, you have nirvana, you have whatever, yeah? Every day. Or very often. Must not be every day the same. Every different experience.
I know that the law of universal, I mean, of cause and effect, you know, universal law. Can you tell me more of the other universal laws?
There is a higher law than cause and effect. That is the law of grace, law of forgiveness, which come directly from God. The law of cause and effect is the underling, as is the subordinate who are appointed by God to regulate the universe. But there are higher law above that. That is the law of love, forgiveness, grace. That is what Jesus brought down to earth when he came. That is what Buddha brought to us when he was in the physical body. And that's what any great enlightened master will bring to people, whoever come to them for refuge and help. That is the law of love and grace. When you come to them, no bad karma will affect you. They raise you above the law of karma. For example, if you know the king, and you should not fear his minister or his bodyguard, you are king's friend, you are the king's protector. It's different, right?
Thank you for your compassionate presence on today's Words of Wisdom. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television for more uplifting and constructive programs 24 hours a day, every day of the week. With heaven's blessings, may all beings on our beautiful planet coexist in peace, love, and happiness.